Welcome back. This is Manuel Criollo. You're listening to Voices from the Front Lines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And on the phone, we have Sandy Banks, who's a LA Times staff writer, who recently wrote a profile on Mayor Hahn back on May 8th. People should go out and check it out. There was two profiles done, both on Antonio Villaraigosa and James Hahn. So welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thank you very much.
So, Sandy, you know, I think one of the reasons why we were really interested in having you on the show was because, you know, you gave a very good background of who this person is in terms of his own background. Obviously, a lot of people know him as the son of Kenneth Hahn. A lot of people know him for his sort of lack of lackluster characteristics in contrast to, obviously, his contender that's running against him. But it was, you know, really interesting to figure out how he was a Yale leader and for the basketball team. He actually, you know, he has a sort of self-defacing view of himself at moments. Yet he's a very popular guy back when he was really young, and you know, he's a big political machine that he's never lost an actual election. And given even all those characteristics that he lacks as, let's say, a candidate, he's been able to at this moment really survive and you know, really move forward in his own life. Why don't you give us a little bit more of what the psychology of somebody like James Hahn and what drives him to become, you know, to be mayor and drives him to have the different posts he has had throughout this, his life?
Well, I think in my profile on Hahn and the one on Villaraigosa, Tina Dott's profile on Villaraigosa, we both were able to kind of unlock a little bit of what led them to this place. And with Jim Hahn, I think it was pretty much a foregone conclusion as he grew up that he was supposed to go in politics. In fact, his sister says that, Janice, who's a councilwoman, that their father presented the political life as a calling and that it was a noble thing to do and it was a way to help, and that he really kind of groomed them to do that. And so here's Jim Hahn, who's personality-wise very unlike his father, who was very warm and gregarious and had natural instincts to go out and get to know people and was always looking out for ways to help people. And then here's Jim, who is very shy, very much like his mother, and reserved, and has, you know, some difficulty in social situations. But he has on his shoulders this expectation that he's going to go and follow in his father's footsteps. And I think he did well in some ways in high school. He makes a joke about it. He says, as you say, he's very self-effacing, that he ran for political office several times in high school and he lost every election. But he was popular because he was a nice guy. I mean, he was kind of inoffensive and he was always willing to step in and help out and do the jobs that didn't get a lot of glory. And so he was very well liked, and they picked him as a cheerleader in high school, which was a sign of popularity, they said, because they didn't have many boys doing it, and they wanted guys that seemed kind of manly, you know, and popular, and he was one that was picked, and he was also voted best-looking guy in high school. So he was well liked, but he wasn't seen then, obviously, as any kind of a political operator. But you know, I don't think what came across from people that knew him and from talking to him and his sister, there didn't seem to be much choice about whether he would go into politics. That was just the family business in the same way, you know, an electrician brings his son into the business. And for Antonio, it was a way to escape the difficulties of his life and the feeling of not being important and not mattering. Politics was a way to shine and to, you know, show that you did count and that people do like you and you are important. So I think both of them, the roots of what they're doing are in their family lives and their youth.
You know, one thing that was really interesting in reading both of them, both of their profiles, you know, in many ways some people would argue we had a social revolution in the United States back in the 1960s and 70s, and both of these people very much connected to those things. On one hand, you have Antonio Villaraigosa, who was very moved by the Chicano power movement back in the 60s and 70s, and Kenneth Hahn, who in many ways represents sort of the best wing, I guess, on some level, of the white community reaching out to the black community, and who was on some level, you know, much more reticent to be able to communicate with the black community that he represented. How do you think both of those people, both of these candidates, were moved by that time period?
You know, for Jim Hahn, I think he was somewhat isolated, or almost had kind of a schizophrenic relationship to it, because he was living in a black community during the riots, at a time when whites were in danger just because they were white. Yet his father was very much loved and revered in that community. So that must have been a very difficult position to be in. And his family was as unlike as Antonio's as it could be. I mean, he had a mother who didn't work. Dinner was on the table at 6:30 every night. Dad came home and got in his pajamas by 7:30 and went to bed by 9:30. And it was, you know, they went to church 3 times a week. They were not allowed to. Their mother didn't approve of dancing or playing cards or no bad language. So inside their household, that revolution never happened. It was, you know, they were like in a time warp. But then outside, there was all this chaos, and he was beaten up just for being white, and you know, he couldn't find himself. So I would imagine that must have been a very challenging time for him. And he speaks about it, you know, I won't say passionately, but very earnestly. I mean, he is still, I think, struggling to understand and to relate to the black neighbors that he had. And he's made, you know, I think he, when he was young, made a sincere effort to figure out what was going on and what caused this big revolution. But he, you know, it didn't play out in his own life, so it's hard to understand. And Tony, on the other hand, was very active in the Chicano studies movement. He was in college agitating for more classes in Mexican American history, and even in high school, he was, you know, things like he wanted classes there in Mexican American history, and he wanted to remove a ban on wearing T-shirts to school. He was an activist who was kind of empowered, I think, by the political social revolution, and, you know, pumped up by that, and he got very engaged in it. But again, he was in, you know, a community where he had a lot of support for that too, as opposed to Jim Hahn being isolated in his community. So I think it affected them both, but in very different ways.
Well, it's funny. Hi, this is Eric Mann. Sandy, are excellent articles. I mean, you and Tina should be really...
We should get a raise, I think, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we think that's one of the big causes. Forget about voting tomorrow. We urge you to march on the LA Times demanding a raise, but this is clearly, let's get our issues in priority here, folks. No, it's the kind of stuff that, you know, very insightful. I think both candidates seem to have opened up to you, which is also... you know, a challenge for journalists.
Yeah.
Let me put a spin on it, reading both, that see what we think. I mean, on one hand, the way I read the Antonio story, and I've known both these candidates, you know, in the present, is Antonio is both the movement, the kid who was not an automatic, that is to say, not all Chicanos rose up, mm-hmm. not all Chicanos from fathers who brutalized their mother, sat around and read with their mother and read the classics. Not all Chicanos were involved in the Chicano power movement. Those were choices he made. Jim Hahn chose to go to a segregated school. I mean, I'm white. I grew up in the civil rights movement. I chose to live in the black community, not because I thought I was going to be mayor someday, but I was a civil rights organizer. I was in Newark during the 1968 rebellion in an all-black neighborhood. When the tanks came through the neighborhood, and we were sitting out on the street, and they turned on us, these kids from the National Guard turned on us and almost shot us, and we all went running into the building. And years later, I read about so many people that have been killed in Newark who were just sitting on their stoop like we were. So James Hahn had a chance to really relate to black people, and as you pointed out, didn't he go to a religious and segregated, pretty much a white school?
He did, but I don't know that it's fair to say that he chose that, because my impression from talking to him and people that knew him was he didn't feel he had much choice. You know, in his family culture, you know, this is the way it's going to be. And his family was very religious. The church was the foundation of their life. They were at church 3 times a week. The kids went to church camp every summer. So this school was, you know, a church school was kind of a foregone conclusion for them when they got to high school. And also their parents were very worried, not only about racial things, but about the sexual revolution and drugs and music. And, you know, they were very old-fashioned, straight-laced people, and they wanted their son protected. And I think, you know, if that school had been religious and all black, they still probably would have sent him there. But I think he wasn't raised. Antonio was clearly raised to take ownership of things more, and he had to. And, you know, if you want to look at impact, I think you look at how strongly the family impacts on the way a kid grows up in this case, because Antonio would, you know, after school, his mother had to work. She's a single mom, so he'd go to the park and read, or he'd go to the library. He had to kind of take care of himself. And Jim Hahn had everything kind of mapped out for him, and yet he was also very responsible. He held two jobs as a teenager. He never broke any rules. You know, they were both kind of took responsibility in their own way, but I think Antonio was just much more connected to the world, kind of, where Jim Hahn was much more sheltered from the world. And I, you know, I don't know how much of that. With Jim Hahn, I never got much sense that these were his choices. The one thing he did talk about that I didn't get in the story that kind of reflects a choice was when he was in college, he went to do volunteer work at a legal aid clinic for battered women, and it was the first time that he ever realized that, you know, women were getting beaten up and that restraining orders didn't matter and that police, you know, turned a blind eye to this, and that was part of what led him to be a lawyer. But, you know, when you see and think of Antonio watching his mother getting battered as a child and Jim Hahn not really knowing it existed until he was, you know, 22 years old, that's quite a difference.
We're speaking to Sandy Banks, a reporter with the LA Times, who, along with Tina Daunt, wrote some pretty amazing profiles on both of the candidates on the May 8th, 2005 edition of the LA Times. Well, let's go back a little bit on just, again, sort of following the steps of James Hahn. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting about this race that happened 4 years ago and it's still happening to this day, you know, even though I would say James Hahn, you know, from the moment we met him, maybe I met him about 4 years ago, I felt like there was a very deep honesty of his level of him wanting to enforce the Civil Rights Consent Decree that we signed with the MTA and, you know, was pretty militant about defending civil rights and speaking in a very honest way about, given that he had spent so long at the city attorney, it seemed like he was pretty caring about the questions. But it's interesting to me that in this race and the last race, that most of his base comes out of a pretty reactionary, you know, sort of white, you know, sort of folks, suburban folks in the valley or down in the bay. How does he connect to that? I mean, in other words, his own roots are not even close to that. But how does he grapple with that question? Because on the other hand, I do see that he has slipped from that position of a very strong and relatively militant position. Militant is a strong word, but much more willing to engage on the question around civil rights. But yet his base totally doesn't represent that.
Yeah, and that's a good question. And I suspect that people identify, those people that are his base, identify with him as a person. You know, they have much more in common with him, the way he was brought up, the way he thinks, the way he, you know, his whole life, the way he lives his life now, they feel much more comfortable with him than they would with Antonio, who has, from his base, people who probably respect that he beat the odds and that he, you know, overcame these difficulties. And, you know, there's people that can identify with that. And you know, and so they feel, you know, an allegiance to him and a closeness to him. And I think Hahn's base probably feels that way with him. I always wonder how much of voting is on, you know, specific issues and how much of is just your comfort level with the candidate, which we saw a lot with the Bush election. So many people voted for him because they just believe him and they like him. And, you know, and I think that a lot of Hahn's base may not be politically like him, but they are emotionally like him or socially like him.
Oh, I think you're right. But I think that one of the things, you know, again, we're not asking you to, I mean, you, and Tina, Sandy, you know, you created sort of a template. You were careful to not, in the kind of biographies you did, to say, and therefore I think he's going to be good on this issue or bad on this issue. And we're not asking you to really, you know, we're just enjoying your articles and talking to you about it. But I think one of the things we have to be careful about is white people feel very comfortable with white people, and white people feel very uncomfortable as a group with blacks, Latinos, and Asians, certainly those who are assertive about any form of racial oppression. They like white people like, you know, black people who say whatever is in the past is in the past. But anybody who tries, even in the present, to talk about racism creates, for most white people, not all, a discomfort level. So I think what Manuel was saying, or we're saying, is that I had a couple of thoughts. One is, you know, when you said he was well-liked, you know, there's a line in The Death of a Salesman where Willie Loman says about this, the boss's son, he was liked, but he was not very well-liked. You know, and I think that Han has that way of, yeah, he's liked, but he doesn't elicit tremendous passion around the guy, you know. I mean, he doesn't, there's nobody going to the death for Jim Han. That's why I think, which is sad, he has raised such a strong anti-Villaraigosa campaign, because he ran in the beginning on vote for me, and that didn't resonate.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, consistent with what you wrote is what I'm saying, that a person who can't make the human connection like his dad did. One more question I'll throw to you back on the Freudian, you know. It must be hard to be Kenny Han's son.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Was that, why don't you just talk a little bit about that and his election?
I mean, I think it must be wonderful to be Kenny Han's son
right.
in some way.
Yes, that's right.
Because in his first election, he took pains to list himself on the ballot, and I believe he still does, as James Kenneth Han.
Right.
And, you know, we covered when he first ran for mayor, when you go out in the black community, reporters would, over and over, people would say, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Kenny.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, Jimmy, right. And so I think it, in many ways it's very easy to be his son. But to know that that's what people, now that you are mayor and you are in a position that is, you know, commensurate with the level that Kenny Han was as a county supervisor, and now people are going to actually compare you to your dad, that must be really difficult. And although it's interesting, he, you know, his father was known for things like, you know, fixing the potholes and he's the one that got the call boxes, the emergency call boxes installed on the freeways. We didn't have those. He did very practical things. He was the first one. He offered blacks jobs in his administration, I mean, in his staff office, and that had not been done before. He did very practical things. And those are the same kind of things that Jim Han talks about when he talks about why he's a good mayor, because he has after-school programs and because he synchronized the traffic lights, you know. And so I think, again, he learned that kind of thing, those tangible things, you know, this is what a leader does, from his dad. But the question is whether today, in this much more complicated age and in a very different job, you know, when you're mayor, is that what people want? And I don't know if, you know, if that's, I mean, part of the election, I think, will be a referendum on that. What kind of a mayor do you want? And he's, you know, he's following in many ways the template set down by his dad, even though he's not his dad. He's, you know, not like his dad. It must be very difficult.
Well, at least between him and his therapist, you know. So,
yeah, right.
why don't you end with, you obviously were not doing the story on Villaraigosa, so you both read and followed it. Did you and Tina in any way collaborate in terms of just even comparing notes on the two profiles?
No, in some ways I wish we would have, because, you know, I think there were some places that, you know, I read hers and I thought, oh, if I'd known she was going to say that, here's something I would have put in mine.
Right.
No, we didn't. I mean, we both only commiserated with how difficult it is to do a profile on somebody who has been profiled so much. And we went into this with specific, I mean, I was specifically to look at how does it affect, you know, a person growing up in a neighborhood like this where you're in the minority and you're isolated and you have this very famous father. So, you know, I was looking at specific things, and she was also looking at, you know, what is it like to grow up, you know, without your dad and, you know, to have to scrap for everything you get, you know, how did those things shape you? So we were both looking. And one thing I think we both found is the impact of the father. I mean, it's, you know, in both cases, I think these guys had, you know, some father issues that propel them forward, you know, for good or ill. Very different issues. But, you know, it left both of us feeling like, wow, you know, your early life is really important, and the people in your family are really important in shaping you and, you know, giving you direction and all. So I think we came to some really similar conclusions, even though we worked independently on it.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and obviously you, to the degree you were both given a mandate to find a niche, the two articles touched a chord with a lot of readers, and we were very happy to have you on, and we give our regards to Tina and tell her sorry she wasn't able because of health reasons to come on today. Okay. But we're with Sandy Banks from the LA Times. It was called Early Challenges, Different Paths, Same Goal. James K. Hahn grew up in South L.A., shifted from white to black. He didn't, but South L.A. did. He struggled to fit in both worlds, a detachment that still defines him. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to do a quick break, and when we come back, listen to this number, folks, 818-985-5735. You don't have to deal with the psychology or the background. Again, who are you going to vote for, and, of course, who do you think the progressive, black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, anti-war, environmental audience should vote for and why? We'll try to keep it around 1 minute. Last time people were great, which will get a lot of our listeners a chance to make their point. Take a quick break, and when we come back, jump on the lines, 818-985-5735. We want to hear from you.